Welcome to the Round 4 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and you're joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, everyone. G'day, Marcus. Can we start talking about rankings now?
Yeah, you overtook me, mate, so I knew you'd be keen. But we've got an intro, a guest who's joining us for this show. Dunny, welcome back. I don't think you've been back on since we've officially kicked off past lockout. So welcome back, mate. Hope you've been going well in Supercoach scoring.
Thanks for having us back, guys. We'll have a bit of a chat about scoring shortly, but I don't think we need to discuss rank all that much, to be honest.
Dunny had a little bit of a convergence of poor scores this week. So before we get into our updates, the rundown for this show is basically going to read Max Gorn down, what to do with him. Nick Newman, being quite a tempting rookie in, whether or not to trade him in with rookies that haven't quite appreciated in cash yet. And Swallow. A mid-pricer that a lot of us, especially on the show, were quite excited about, but because he missed round one and didn't end up in a lot of sides. He scored 117 or something like that to Amira's 44 on the weekend, and that really flipped things on its head. So, yeah, Mark, I bet you're going to claim it came down to logic there. So before we get into that, let's go with a personal update. Mark, I'm pretty sure you were king of the roost this week, so you can kick us off, mate.
So scored 23-22, ranking up to 1,029, so not like ridiculously high, but after being 45,000 after the first round, very happy with that. Taylor Adams, Doherty got it done. Selwood also, Rockliffe wasn't massive this week. Swallow, as you mentioned, was huge. Jared Witts, massive. Good to see McRae, Delhouse and Nank all over 100. I think really the big thing was that I just didn't get any of the low rookie scores on field. Like I had Marchbank, but sort of everyone had him, and Pal Pepper, but everyone didn't. I just didn't have that extra really low rookie score, and I didn't have Max Scorn, obviously. So those two things made a huge difference to my team this week. Interesting that probably three players that we were pretty hot on, Marcus, were Taylor Adams, David Swallow, and Jared Witts, and all dominated on the weekend.
Yeah, and I'm pretty disappointed that I made the late pivot to Omira from Swallow, especially because to end up with a public pick that I preferred less to Swallow, and last year I picked a player that didn't play around. Oh, it hurts. So congrats to you, mate. I know there was a good chance he might not have made it into your team if you were in a position to actually trade, but that's worked out brilliantly, so congrats to you. 44 Omira was probably the most disappointing part of my scoring on field this week. The next would probably be Zach Tui, 66. So he's averaging 82 after three rounds, and that's obviously not what I was hoping for. That's right in line with his price point. So questions over whether or not I want to wait to move him at a more opportune time or kind of pull the trigger.
He was playing hurt for most of that second half, mate, so probably give him a little bit of slack this week.
Yeah, with Nick Newman, though, available this week, there's a bit of temptation there, but won't go into that for now. Toronto 49, Eddie 42 was also painful. I literally swapped Eddie to Parfitt, like, with 15 seconds to go, so that was really painful, because Parfitt scored 99, and last week I had Parfitt on field, so that was a little bit unfortunate, but you can't win them all. Missing out on Max Gorn's obviously good, otherwise my structure continues to hold me in good stead. So 22.08 for me, I slipped down 1,200 spots, but this early on in the season, I'm not particularly fussed about that. So ranked 2,400th and sitting pretty happy. Donny, how'd you go, mate?
So as soon as I saw my score on Sunday night, I knew that I was going to get a message from you boys to come on the show this week. Whenever I have a bad week, that's when it usually happens. So I suffered a bit of pain this week and I only scored 2,058. My ranking is, I was up in the 5,000s last week, but I plummeted 16,000 spots this week with that score. I guess it just goes to show how tight the competition really is, this year at the moment. So my team, I did suffer the Max Gorn problem, so his 27 really hurt me. I also had Jaeger Amira with his 44, and I also had Tom Stewart on field down back with his 22. So, I think my structure is still okay. Obviously, the injury to Gorn didn't help, and Amira scoring poorly and Tom Stewart, that they just really hurt me. And like everyone else, I had Marchbank and Pal Pepper on field two. So, look, I thought I'd made a pretty good start to the year, but this week caught me a bit undone, but I'm sure I'll bounce back from there.
Yeah, mate. Sounds like you had a bit of bad luck go your way on the weekend. So, yeah, hoping that the next time you come on, you get a 16,000 jump, Dunny.
Well, I hope to be jumping back up there this week, mate. But, yeah, you know, as you say, it happens. And I think that's probably the thing for the listeners as well. Don't get too down on your ranking this time of the year. It jumps all over the place because things are just so tight. Yeah, and you'll find that you'll start to pull away from the field as we go further through the season. That's what I tend to find anyway.
Yeah, definitely agree with that, Tony. We are now going to cover a quick group update. So Super Saints team was the leading team in our Supercoach Coach group. He scored 24-45, which is absolutely massive.
Massive. It's huge.
To our Supercoach Coach leagues, we're proud to say that we still hold a majority of the top 10 leagues. I think we're 8 out of the top 10 at the moment.
That's a pretty big majority, mate.
Yeah, and we've got another 6, I think, in the 10 after that. And we've got plenty more in the top 100. And I saw on the forum someone was saying, you know, one of our leagues is 130th in round 3, you know, not quite pulling its weight. I mean, that's pretty fantastic if we have such high standards for our leagues, because there's over 25,000 leagues out there. So for us to be sort of crushing it to this extent, I think is a huge credit to all of you out there. So even if your rankings aren't quite flying the way you want them to, most of you are holding the Supercoach Coach banner up fairly strongly. So congrats to the whole community. We'll move on to the actual rundown now. So how we're going to structure this up is talk about the injured players first, the players that we're going to trade out, and then players that we're going to trade in. So we'll start off with Gorn's injury as the first topic. The first question here is from Gary from Facebook. Arguments against bringing in Witts for Gorn. If you've already missed out on Jared Witts at his starting price, he has gone up, you know, something like 80K in just the 1 week. So he's up to 292,000, but he scored 114 on the weekend. He's averaging 98. Still presents quite a bit of value, I reckon. Thoughts on trading in somebody who's had one price movement already but still holds some value, as opposed to just going for the premium options, which we'll discuss shortly.
Jeez, I think you'd really want to be getting an awesome restructure out of your team, like Gorn to Witts, and then really using that leftover 250,000 or whatever it is extremely effectively somewhere else to fix a hole, whether that's like O'Meara up to Dusty or Bont or someone like that. But I think, Marcus, probably you're as good as anyone to give a perspective on this, because doing that feels a lot like the Mark Seeby situation, where once you make a trade in the rucks to someone else that you know you're going to have to trade at some point, that just becomes a nightmare, because like a lot of people have already got Sanderlands in that other ruck spot, and you're just going to end up using like 4 trades in your rucks, which is just an insane amount of trades to be spending on 2 positions.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you there, Mark. I think, you know, I started with the Gorn Sanderlands combination, knowing that I would have to upgrade Sandy, hopefully to Grundy at some point during the season. I think by going down to Witts, you're going to need to use a further trade in the ruck eventually to trade him up. On the other side of that, you know, Gary was worried about the one price movement having happened already. He's only 292,000, which is, you know, it's cheap as for a ruckman. But once again, I think if, as you said, if you're going to do that, you've got to be trading one of your other mid prices up to an uber premium if you're going to do that, because you just can't afford to have that cash lying around. I agree. I don't think I would be heading that direction.
Marcus, you're a sucker for this sort of trade.
Yeah, you know I am. Especially this early in the season, I think when you can take a mid-pricer that you only sacrifice, like if you're sacrificing 10 points in scoring, but you're getting 300K in value that you can plug into somewhere else in your team, I just find that it tends to be sort of the best time of year to be seeking out those value-maximizing activities. But having said that, I think it's a combination decision. You're not just looking at the mid-pricer that you're bringing in, regardless of the fact they've gone up in price. I mean, you just got to look at Witts at a 290K player right now. And that's still a decent enough value proposition considering his average so far. But I kind of think that you need to look at that together with the lens of who are the top 2 rucks going to ultimately be And are they available this week for a decent enough price point that I can commit to them, considering that you have gone and you have enough money, you have the money to spend? Can I commit to a bloke that I think is going to end up in the top two rucks? If you're confident on that, then yeah, maybe you'd bring in a Martin or a Grundy this week. If you're not so confident, maybe you'd hold and wait to bring in Goldstein in a few weeks once he drops in price. Danny 14 is asking us to compare Martin v. Grundy.
I think for me, Marcus, I'll be looking at bringing Brody Grundy in for Gawn. I think, you know, at the moment he's the one who seems to have the highest ceiling out of the two. I am a little bit worried about Steph Martin if Archie Smith does come back into that side, whereas Grundy does seem to have that sole ruckman position sewn up. I, like many others, will be very nervous about picking Steph Martin again after he burnt me so badly last year, in not only in Supercoach but in draft leagues as well. So, yeah, I think those two will probably end up being the number one and two ruckman at the end of the year. But I guess I can run with Grundy and Sandy for a bit longer to see where that picture ends up.
I'm really glad that you said that, Danny, because I've got the same feelings on Steph. And maybe that's not a legitimate thing to feel just because he burnt us so badly last year that we just can't consider him again. I think that your fears about Archie Smith are fairly real, that you think that they'd want to get games into him at some stage. But I guess you could say about Grundy that Mason Cox might come in and steal some points there as well, especially with Collingwood's forward line totally dysfunctional. Steph was awesome against the Bombers. He just completely destroyed us. But then again, he was up against McKernan, and McKernan just couldn't handle him at all. I agree that I think those two will probably be either the top two rucks or really close to. I was pretty hot on Grundy in the preseason, and he's pretty fun to barrack for. He doesn't rely on taps. He gets a lot, heap of the ball. I'd be pretty happy to have him in my team, fun to barrack for. I guess they're similar sort of ruckmen, so fairly hard to split. Pick your favourite one, I guess. Marcus, do you have a different opinion?
I'm a lot more sure on Grundy over Martin. His potential upside compared to Steph, like where they are in terms of age and career trajectory, like I'd just much rather take the punt on Grundy. It's sort of like you could pick one guy that you're really excited about a breakout potential, and then, or you could pick another guy that sort of you're cheering on to sort of cling on to that form. And I think one's sort of a lot more palatable. So now that we've had the conversation about rucks, like where are you sitting in terms of trading in a mid-pricer compared to one of these, you know, potential top two rucks?
If it was Nankervis and you don't have him, I think I would definitely go down that track. If it was the other two, I would definitely lead towards, like you said sort of at the start, bringing someone that you could think is going to be a top two ruck, unless you can like sell an awesome restructure where you bring in someone else that's going to average a lot of points.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that, mate. I'm looking more at going the Grundy route, the top two ruckman, or someone I think is going to be in the top two rucks. I don't want to be using too many trades in my ruck line if I don't have to. And I'm pretty happy with the rest of the structure of my team. So based on that, that's the way I would head.
And I guess the other thing that is to just be a little bit wary on Witts. Like, is he going to average 100 for the season, and is he going to get within 10 points of these other premium rucks? Like, I know that he's had a good couple of weeks, but that's still a hotly debated topic, whether he can reproduce that sort of form. He was up against the Hawthorn rucks on the weekend, and Hawthorn are known for giving away points in the rucks. So I don't think maybe I'm quite as bullish on Witts, even though I've got him.
Lincoln Beggs is asking about whether or not it's too late for Nankervis. So, Mark, you just referenced this. Nankervis is averaging 115, which does put him as a top two ruck as of round three. Definite in for you, Mark. I'm guessing with the DPP flexibility. Dunny, you have Nankervis, don't you?
Yeah, I've got him up forward, and I think he's definitely worth having. He's scoring well. There's not much competition for him there. He's probably got some more cash to make, so.
I know you like Grundy too, mate. So if you didn't have Nankervis, could you put yourself in those shoes? Like, would you bring Nankervis in over Grundy, or would you take Grundy?
No, going straight into an R1 position, or R2 even, depending on, you know, what you else you had, I'd still be going the Grundy. I think, once again, Nankervis is up there at the moment. I'm a bit unsure as to what he's going to do for the rest of the season. And based on that, I'd probably still be going the Grundy route.
I'd be going Nankervis. Obviously, I'm not in that situation, but at 420, I just think there's a heap of value still in Nankervis. And like you can bring in another ruck later that you think's doing quite well, I think that's a really good situation to be in. So he's posting must-have numbers at the moment. I don't expect Richmond to win every week, but Yeah, Nankervis for me.
I guess, sorry, just thinking while you were talking there, Mark, if you were going to bring him in with the view to then flipping him back into the forward line at some point and bringing in potentially another ruckman later on, that's probably, if I was going to do that, I'd probably go that way.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. I like the fact that if you have Nankervis in your rucks, you have the additional flexibility of being able to trade another ruckman in to cover for an injury. So, I do like Nankervis, and I don't think it's too late. 425 for a ruck forward that's good enough to sit at F6 is still a good buy. So the next question is from Charlie Burgess, and his question is, he has Gorn and Nankervis, but Nankervis is a cover player. So he's considering swapping Nankervis from his forward line into the rucks and then picking a different player instead. So you can then pivot a mid forward into your forward line, even bring in a midfielder, for example. So he's considering somebody like Swallow. But really, the heart of the question here is, if you have Nankervis in your forward line and you have Gorn in your rucks, which you are in that position, Dunny, would you consider trading Gorn out to a non-ruck player completely and just using Nankervis as that cover?
I'd certainly consider it. I don't think it's a silly idea. I guess it's a little bit what we just talked about, trading Nankervis into your rucks with a view to using him up forward later on. I guess the way I've structured up is really to try and use Nankervis as a bit of ruck cover during the bye periods and keeping him up forward with a couple of primo ruckmen in the R1, R2 position. But I certainly don't think it's a bad idea. If you're happy and comfortable to keep Nankervis as your R1, R2, I guess it depends on who your other ruckman is. My ruckman's Sandy, which I know I have to upgrade at some point because I don't think he's going to be in the top two ruckman at the end of the year. But if you're running with, say, Steph as your other ruckman, I think putting Nankervis in there at R2 and then bringing in a top premium into either your midfield or your forward line, it's certainly a very valid way to go.
Yeah, I think you described that pretty well, mate. It's just with Sanderlands, like, he's so likely to have a one-week injury at some point that having that cover is just the insurance that you need to have Sanderlands there. So it's definitely a gamble if you wanted to go that way. I could definitely understand that you're going to get the highest averaging player into your team if you go that way, because you're going to be able to pick a gun midfielder. But is that going to cost you down the track when you need Nankervis to cover, especially, as you said, over the buys?
That assumes you trade your ruckman out for a midfield via pivoting him to the forward line and then to the midfield. I'd say in that situation, yes, I'd be tempted to potentially pick a midfielder over a ruckman. But if what you're doing is picking a forward over a ruckman, I think that's where I raise a little bit of a red flag. Even though it sounds better that you don't have to choose between players that you're not certain will be a top two ruck like Grundy or Martin, you're in a position where you're picking a forward who are averaging much closer to 100 than a ruckman who has the capability of averaging 110 plus. So I wouldn't be trading in Toby Green, for example, 98 over Grundy 107.
I totally agree with that, mate. But the player that people are considering is Nick Riewoldt, who had a huge score on the weekend, and they're thinking that maybe he could go 110 plus.
Yeah, I mean, if you were that sold on Riewoldt, who only 1 week ago looked like he could have been out for a little while, then you might consider it if you thought Riewoldt was an absolute standout option. But, I mean, I don't want to play into sort of extreme projections, because then, you know, we could make a lot of players look tempting. I just want to look at the average, and the average for a top two ruck, it's actually sitting at 114. Top six forwards, you're sitting below 100, basically. So I would trade a midfielder over a ruckman potentially, but I wouldn't trade a forward in over a ruck. Like I said, if you thought Riewoldt was a freak consideration, I mean, that's a different conversation.
Yeah, and I don't share that perspective. It's just that I know that there are some people out there thinking that he is far and away going to be the top forward this year, and they're looking to potentially bring him in this week.
I agree with what you said there, Marcus, and I'd be equally as nervous as Mark is about Riewoldt. My concern is just how many games he will miss between here and the end of the season.
So I was going to leave that for later on in the show, because we did get quite a lot of questions about Nick Riewoldt, but let's just close it off while we're at it now. If you were looking to potentially trade down an O'Meara type, you could trade out a Taranto type who's potentially not fulfilling his high rookie starting price tag. That's probably why I think a lot of people are considering maybe a forward option. Also because the forward rookies haven't quite panned out as hoped in terms of scoring potential. As much as I am tempted by Rewalt, if I do trade in a forward, which I am legitimately considering this week, it'll be a JJK type instead, who's a little bit more safe in terms of injury.
I think that there's some people that traded him out that are actually looking to trade him back in because they're just so pained by the fact. Just because you remember what this happens like you remember with Rockliffe, how this has happened to me before, where he dominates and then gets injured, and then you trade him back straight away because you're just so like frustrated that he's come back early and that he's dominating again. Or like Rocky returned and got 200, I think, last year. There's plenty of people done trades like that in the past, but I think that the expectations on him are a bit overinflated because last year against Brisbane, I think he kicked 9 goals in the last round or second last round and had the record amount of marks in a game. So I think he might see Brisbane as his bunnies that Eddie had. And so I expect him to have a really good year, but he is 34, 35, has already had a serious knee injury or potentially serious knee injury this year. Yeah, I think there's enough concerns of him that you wouldn't be stretching to bring him in.
All right, I don't want to spend too much longer on this next player, but I think we should cover him. Toddy Goldstein, 105, then missed, then 52. If you hung on because you had Nan Curvis's cover, let's say, how would you deal with him now, considering his break-even's 187? Is now the time to sell out, considering Proust has performed well in the ruck while Goldstein's been up forward?
It looks like he is going to not work out in the short term. He might come back longer term, but seems to be carrying injuries and has competition in the ruck. So, unfortunately, if you can find a way to get out, then this might be the time to do it.
Yeah, I think the biggest alarm bell for me on Goldie was the fact that he started down in the forward line at the start of the game, and I think Proust took the opening bounce, from what I heard. So, for me, that's a massive red flag that he's either still carrying some sort of serious injury or he's either on the way out for Proust coming in, particularly if they keep losing games. So they want to get some more time into Proust.
And in my opinion, Magic Door is sort of as dangerous for stealing points as well, because if you're losing games and you're wanting to put time into youngsters, then Magic Door, a specimen like that, flexibility like that in terms of playing ruck forward, and sort of the fact that he's ready to play AFL and hasn't quite had consistency in games, I think they'll want to get some time into him as well. So, yeah, if you still have Goldstein, I'd agree with the comments made so far. Let's move on to trade out targets now. The first one here is a question here from Jester. He's asking about whether or not it's time to admit the Jaeger experiment may have been a bomb. Worst of the mid prices so far. Is it worth moving him to Newman? So it's funny how much can change in a week. After having 36 disposals in the 80s last week, you go, well, if he just gets his disposal right, and then the week after that, 44, and happens to be against his direct foil, Swallow, who scores 110 plus, really exacerbating his low score and the impact of that. Thoughts on O'Meara and his ability to turn it around? I think he only got 14 disposals, so efficiency definitely wasn't the factor there.
Look, I think that he probably just had a really bad game, got targeted by the Suns, and I expect him to improve a bit over the season. But has he turned out to be a fail pick? Probably. Like, he doesn't seem like he's got any real prospect in the short term of getting up towards premium numbers, and that's what you're really looking at, is that he's either a premium or being worth close to a premium around the buyer's time. So, look, I think that now is not a bad time to get out. I still think he's got some good games in him, but him to Newman, setting up a bit of cash to use somewhere else, I think it's not the worst trade you could do this week. Dunny, is that a bit harsh on Jaeger?
I don't think it's overly harsh. I think I wouldn't certainly be upset with anyone who did trade him out. I won't be trading him out only because I've got other issues to fix around my team at the moment. But, you know, I think I agree with what you said. You know, the Hawks got smashed on Sunday, and none of them were spectacular, really. I mean, Tom Mitchell got in the hundreds, and I think he was the only Hawk that did so. Yeah, that's not going to happen every week to them. Hopefully not for those people who own Hawks in their teams, but I think he'll come back. I think you're right. I think the Suns would have targeted him, saying, hey, we'll get this guy. He decided to walk out on us the week before, 30-plus possessions. He's not going to be poor every week. So he's not going to get to those primo numbers that we were hoping, I don't think, but I'll keep him for a few more weeks yet.
I think 1 week can change a lot in footy and in Supercoach. Frio upset the premiers on the weekend, and Jaeger scored 44 and Swallow scored 110 plus. But next week, that reverses and all perspective changes. So I like that sort of centering comment that you had there, Dunny. And overall, I agree. I don't think Jaeger is a must trade out or should trade out even. But certainly to Mark's point in terms of could you redeploy that cash a bit more effectively based on what we've seen after the first three games? Yes, I don't think that'd be necessarily a bad choice either. So we've talked about moving him on to Newman so far. And if you had Hibbard in your back line, that's something that's definitely open to you. And a lot of people will be pulling that move this week. Now, my follow-up to that is, would you then consider pairing that with an upgrade of a expensive rookie that hasn't quite panned out in order to sort of cash in on Omira's value and upgrade a underperforming expensive rookie to a premium? So the example here from Pies Josh on Twitter is Omira to Newman and Taranto to Rewalt. And that's something that I referenced already earlier on this show. So thoughts about that second trade as a tack on and therefore potentially making it more attractive to trade out Omira this week?
Well, obviously, Josh has got an extra 150,000, 200,000 sitting around to be able to make that trade. One situation I could imagine doing might be like Omira to Newman and then Taranto to Nankervis for people that don't have him. I think that there's probably a bit of value in that. I know that Taranto probably has some good games left in him, or he could definitely spike his price. It might be too early to go on him, but I don't think he's really going to burn you if you do get rid of him early. And bringing in a must-have like Nank is something that you might consider. I guess it just depends on your team structure and where you have rookies playing and whether Newman's going to be on the field and like what does it expose you to? Is it Sam Powell-Pepper or is it someone deeper than that? Because that could be a problem if it's someone less scoring ability than SPP.
Yeah, I agree with you with what you're saying there, mate. I think, you know, the golden rule, I think, is something that you mentioned earlier on, is if you are going to make that trade of Omira down to a, you know, a basement price rookie, you want to have a plan to use that money either this week or at the very latest next week. You don't want to leave that money just sitting around, particularly at this time of the year. You need to be employing all of your dollars to earn more dollars or in a full premium to get those points. So if he's going to do that, he's got to be able to go from one of those mid prices to either a must have or a top premium if he had other cash in the bank.
I very much agree with that. So I'd either keep Omira and not upgrade Taranto, or if I traded Omira, yeah, I'd very much pair that with a trade this week as well. And I agree with your comments in terms of Taranto not being likely to punish you off a 230K price tag. Next question is from Blair Dewsbury or Rick James 7 on Twitter. Now, he's asking about Omira versus Swallow, so Omira to Swallow. Now, this one I'm a lot more sketch on. Now, I understand being tempted by Swallow because he's scored 88 and 117, and that looks great for a 280K price tag, which I always knew. But, I mean, if you didn't start him, you're only cashing in 50K, and surely Omira has a similar chance of having a big spike and being able to get within, you know, 50K of Swallow or, you know, 20K. Like a side swap like that seems very marginal.
It's hard to answer this question without saying, I told you so, mate. No, seriously, it is a little bit tricky just because, like, I rated Swallow above Omira quite easily at the start of the season. So it's hard for me to give advice here. I think that swapping mid-pricer to another mid-pricer is always a bit yuck.
Yeah, it's not something I like to do. I don't like to go mid-pricer to mid-pricer. I was actually planning to start both Omira and Swallow, but when Swallow was that late out in round one, I did drop right down to a rookie in his place. But I guess the upside to going Omira to Swallow at the moment is the fact that Omira's break-even is in the 50s and Swallow is at minus 42. So you're not going to lose out in terms of cash by bringing Swallow in, but I guess you are using a trade to go mid-price to mid-price, and you know that's something we always advocate against. But and equally, as I think Marcus, you said earlier, you know, Omira could have just as good a game this week, and Swallow could have a poor one. You know, with these guys, they are a bit of a raffle sometimes.
Being a sensible super coacher, you got to look at what is his upside. What is Swallow's upside? He could get to 500, and that'd be a fantastic result. But do you see Omira not hitting 400. Like, I don't. He's at 327 now. Sure, he just scored a 44. But over the course of the season, like, I'm pretty confident in O'Meara hitting 450. For me, the largest sort of difference I can see in terms of end value or trade-out value is, like, max 100K. And I really doubt it gets to that larger differential.
I think it's just something that we've always said to the listeners and something that most of us do live by is we don't like to side swap unless we really, really have to due to an injury like a Max Gawn situation. You know, trades are just so valuable. You know, you'd hate to get to the other end of the season and think, oh, geez, if I didn't do that, I could have taken one more trade to get me through to the finals. But as much as it's killing me not to have him, because I did rate him quite highly as well, I won't be doing that.
I mean, I'd even downgrade a premium to bring in Swallow and upgrade somewhere else and restructure that way before I would side swap like that. In all honesty, that seems super marginal. Swallow missed round one because his knee was sore, right? So,
yeah.
So the next question here is from Brett Worrell 28 on Twitter. He's asking about trading Yeager O'Meara to Murphy. Now, I think last week at 426, that would have looked pretty good, but I've looked at his price. It's gone up bloody 78K in 1 week. I mean, 138, 130, 158. I'm really scared to sort of pass on to Mark here because I can feel he's about to blow. 510K, if you could trade up to Murphy, would you?
Probably not. No, I think last week was the time to do it. And I know last week you probably had different information, which made it really hard to do it then. But yeah, it's really hard to be upgrading him at that price. I guess if Murph's going to average 110 plus, then he still presents value. And if there's no targets for the rest of the year, maybe he will.
I think I pretty much agree with that, Mark. I would consider trading into a premium, but yeah, not Murphy at that price. C. Curtis 05 is asking, what about downgrading to Newman elsewhere on the ground in order to upgrade O'Meara rather than downgrade O'Meara? Thoughts on trading potentially even an Andrew McGrath type? Like, we've had quite a few questions about McGrath down to Newman to open up cash to upgrade. Thoughts about that sort of combo to upgrade O'Meara instead of downgrade?
Yeah, look, I think that you've got to bring Newman in this week. I think he's an absolute must-have. So if you're not dealing with Gawn and you have a way to spend that money and one of those ways is upgrading O'Meara, then sure, go for it.
Yeah, I agree. I think Newman has to come in this week. I ran last week with no bench cover in the back line just because I wanted to see what Newman did in his second game and certainly did everything that he needed to. He'll be coming in for Hibbard for me this week. And yeah, certainly you could use that cash to upgrade elsewhere if that's what you needed to do.
Next question here is from Troy Nelson. He's asking about trading out Jared Rufford. So if you've kept Rufford, would you consider Rufford to Swallow this week? That sounds like a decent side swap for me at least. Just
didn't Rufford score like 100 on the weekend? I thought he had a pretty good game.
99, Mark, you are correct. Not bad.
Pretty hard to trade someone out after a 99.
Well, I don't know. I mean, even with his 99 in his round three price tag, his total expected increase in price, if he keeps up an 85 average, is only, you know, 38,000 over the next 3 weeks. So while it seems decent, I don't know if it's great enough to necessarily hold on. For me, Rufford's not a top six forward, but Swallow is one of the most attractive mid prices, considering I really wanted to start him. So for me, that's not too bad. Dunny, that makes you the tiebreaker.
I'd probably be on the verge of trading Roughhead out. I'm a little worried about his output going forward. Yes, he had a 99 on the weekend. Even though they did lose, it was against Gold Coast, who probably not the strongest of teams out there. I'd be really interested to see how he goes against Geelong this week. I don't think he's going to pull too many 99s out of the bag, unfortunately, for his owners. I had him in my preseason team, but did take him out at the last minute, only because I'm just worried about, you know, his consistency of scoring. I've had him in the past, and he can be a bit up and down.
I think to contextualise, Swallow's expected change after 1 week is 65,000. So Swallow could out sort of value Rufford in 1 week in sort of what it'd take Rufford to potentially do in 3 or 4. So I really don't mind that one. We'll move on to the next question here. This one's from Doddy. He's asking about Bowes. Average 40, break even of 40. Potential to sort of trade him out. And I guess you'd pair these sort of rookie trade downs together with a potentially O'Meara upgrade to make it worthwhile. Otherwise, there's probably no particular need to trade out rookies just because their scoring isn't looking particularly fantastic. Last year, we saw some low-scoring rookies turn it around after a little while, and Parfitt's 99 after quite a slow start sort of points to that as well. But depending on the situation, I could see trading him out.
If you didn't have anyone obvious to trade out, you could trade him to Newman. You're not getting a lot of cash for that, but you're getting someone that will actually generate cash versus Bowers, who is not overly generating cash. And I know, like, he got some good possessions in the last quarter against the Hawks, but the Hawks were just witches hats by the time the last quarter rolled around. Yeah. So, like, I've got him in my team, Bowers, and he is way underperformed. I've watched all the Gold Coast games, and I barely know what he looks like.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. I traded him out last week. I missed Dan Butler from the Tigers, so I traded out Bowers for Butler last week. I couldn't see Bowers doing enough to generate some good cash, so I made that correction trade before his price changed.
He caught up in price in 1 week. Yeah, Butler starting, I think, 50K cheaper, so that's a little bit painful. But, yeah, good trade so far for you, Donnie. Like I said, I wouldn't have to trade him out, but I think Bowers probably after Taranto is sort of the next sort of bloke I'd look at. Taranto v. Bowers, Mark, thoughts on that?
Depending on whether you needed the money, I'd prefer to have Taranto playing on my field. I know he's not performing awesome, but, geez, Bowers makes you seriously nervous that he's just going to pop a 15 out or something.
And like sort of top four contender versus bottom four contender sort of thing.
Yeah, and maybe Brian Griffin going down might affect Taranto. I don't know.
Do you think Bowers will hold his spot in the team, Mark?
Well, I thought that if he was going to go out, it probably would have been last week. I think that he is just someone they want to get games into, and I feel like maybe they're committed to him for the year. Like, Will Brody looked more AFL ready, but obviously the coaching staff disagreed with that and think that Bowers can handle it. And he's probably going to have a big game at some point. Probably will get a bunch of possessions. Like we saw with Parfitt on the weekend, like Bowers is rated a lot higher than Parfitt. So if the right circumstances arise, he could have a good game. But yeah, I do expect him to keep getting named, I think.
We spent a bit of time on Gawn. We spent a bit of time on Swallow. That leaves Newman as the next main conversation topic. So that takes us into our trade-in candidates that we're talking about now. The first question here is probably the easiest that we've had so far tonight from J.M. Hawkins. Your thoughts on bringing in Nick Newman for Mitch Hibbert? So we've talked about Newman already being a must-have. Hibbert has obviously played one game, scored 23, and then got dropped. So he seems like a fairly easy out. I think Hibbert to Newman, I'm guessing, will be the number one trade this week, and I don't have any particular issue with that.
Newman, unless selections go weird, that's exactly the trade that I'll be making. My only concern really with Newman is I've already got Otten and Hampton on field, and they played really well on the weekend. So I guess Hampton goes to the bench and Newman goes on the field. Like, I don't have a way to loophole it. So that's my only concern with Newman, is who plays on the field.
Yeah,
I'll be putting Stewart on the bench and bringing Newman on field.
I'm tempted even to trade Tui down to Newman and then investing that money into Omiro and to Taranto just to get Newman on field. So, yeah, he's a must trade in. Agree with what you've both said so far. And Hibbert to Newman is a fair no-brainer. The only question is, do you actually want to get him on field, in which case you might even downgrade an underperforming player to Nick Newman?
Yeah, look, I mean, he's a mature age player, so he looks like his body's AFL ready. He's a good kick. He's got a history of good scoring in the kneeful. He should have played last year, but they held him back the whole year. He's just the exact profile that you don't want to miss. Like, he may not work out. He may get injured. He may get dropped. He may drop his scoring at some point, but his upside is just too high to be skipping him this week.
Okay, so let's say you have four players in your back line, Otten, Marchbank, Hampton, and Stewart, and you have Mitch Hibbert in your midfield. Now, in that particular scenario, like, who would you trade out to get Newman on? Stewart seems like the most likely candidate there, but then you're trading in a 150K player for Nick Newman, and he's not even on field because you're only playing two rookies on field. What would you do in that scenario? Would you still trade Newman in?
I'd still do it.
Agreed. He's that much of a lock, eh? So we'll move to the next question then. Last question for the week. This one's from David Siddles asking about David Swallow, which is a bit funny. Is Swallow worth trading for if you don't have sort of a clear restructure available to you? You don't want to side swap any of your mid prices. Basically, what do you do if you want Swallow and you don't have a good trade for him? Would you consider side swapping one of your expensive rookies that haven't quite worked out if you have cash in bank for Swallow. So if you have Taranto and you had 52K in bank, you could trade straight to Swallow. And I'm in that position
every
this week.
Every day of the week.
Okay, so I would agree with that too, if it's putting Swallow on field. What would you do if you're in my situation, Mark, and you have seven premiums, O'Meara, and you're facing that? Would you still trade him in on the potential upside there? It's tough. I don't think playing Pickett or Parfitt over Taranto is necessarily a large enough downgrade to be too concerned about that.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know that you want to be putting like someone with the value of O'Meara on your bench. Yeah. That does worry me a bit.
Yeah, and I guess he becomes like the first player that you downgrade. Like, you can't even be upgrading him because then you're putting Swallow onto your bench.
Yeah.
I mean, Taranto to Swallow, that actually does seem like a really obvious trade because Taranto doesn't look like making a lot. Swallow looks like he could both score a lot of points for you on the field and make a bunch of cash for you. But yeah, if you're pushing O'Meara to the bench, gee, that's tricky. Can you do like O'Meara to Newman and then Taranto to Swallow?
Yep. I could do that. I'll just have money left in the bank, I suppose. You have the O'Meara downgrade cash that you don't end up using in that scenario.
Yeah, I think in that situation, though, if you've got a plan to use that money next week, I don't see any problems with that. I mean, yeah, it sits there for 1 week, but once again, we're very early in the season. Yeah, I think the only way you would do something like that is if you could make a trade in the forward or back and move one of them out such that you didn't have those guys sitting on the bench.
My concern, though, is that I'm essentially doing O'Meara to Swallow, Taranto to Newman, you know, in that scenario.
Yeah.
We recommended against the side swap. Mark, I know you're tempted.
There's your two correction trades.
I've got to say, though, in the amount of questions on this show, you guys are a little bit obsessed by Swallow. I can't understand.
I knew what was going to happen this show. It was going to be very painful for this exact reason, Dunny. Oh, gosh. Enjoy getting to lord it over us for one more week and then trade him in, Mark, just to avoid this.
Yeah, Swallow is actually listed as a test on the injury list with a...
and to be honest, that's probably my one concern over him at the start of the season is just that he just needs to walk past a butterfly and he's potentially going to get himself injured.
Dunny, let's wrap this up in terms of, I know you have Gorn and you don't have Swallow, so I'd like to, after this whole show's been done, sort of where you're sitting at the moment in terms of your trade thoughts.
Yeah, so my trade will be Gorn to Grundy, and then in the back line, I'll probably be going, Hibbert to Newman. They're just the two pretty obvious trades for me and the two that I will have to make this week. So no David Swallow for me.
For me, I'm going to definitely bring in Newman. The question is whether or not I upgrade O'Meara to a premium forward. I really don't think I can get Swallow as much as I'd love to. I just got to hope that he tapers out. So anyway, I think that's sort of it for this week's show. Let's do a quick captain's corner and then call it a day. Darcy Cameron, who a lot of us have, is playing in the first game, so no loophole opportunities there. Anyone with Strandica, he's playing the game on Saturday. So even though that's better than Cameron, you only get two options to choose from as well. So
crap,
Sydney,
well,
West Coast, yeah, Bulldogs, and North. I think Bontempelli would probably be a fairly good option there, or JJK, or one of the Sydney midfielders or Buddy. If you have any of them, you might as well give the VC a go. Hibbard is also playing in the second game, North B Bulldogs. So you can only noot poll West Coast Sydney if he doesn't get named in that instance. Yeah. So very limited options to choose from this week.
I'm sure one of my crappy rookies will probably get dropped, but if I'm limited to those two games, which at the moment it looks like I am, I think Dalhouse and McRae are my only two options because I don't like picking players from North Melbourne. I don't have any Eagles and I don't have any Swans.
Yeah.
The only option that I've got on, or the only real option I think I have for that Thursday night game is Buddy. Whether I could use him, but Buddy in the West, I'd have to look and see how his form's been in the past. What I'd really like is for, and it won't happen, is for Parfitt not to get named, and then I could use Treloar into Dangerfield, but yeah, that's probably not going to happen.
After he won the Rising Star this week, probably not.
No, probably not.
I don't even have a vice captaincy option, I'm pretty sure, this week. Like, I have to choose from a West Coast or Sydney bloke, and I don't have any of those premiums. So maybe I might upgrade O'Meara to Kennedy, and then he'll be my vice. But otherwise, Dangerfield's just the El Capitano for me this week. Playing against Hawthorn, I think Easter Monday, hopefully should be a good score.
If you do like someone like myself and do have Strindika in your team, along with Sandlands that you could loophole, would you go a McRae or a Dalhouse, Mark?
Yeah, look, that's exactly what I'm going to do because they're the only ones in those games. Dalhouse is probably the one because he's got the potential to go the 150 plus, and I probably wouldn't take anything less than 130 with Dangerfield in such good form and playing the Hawks in the current state that they're in.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that's probably what I will look at in that case.
All right, so that wraps up this week's show. Thank you very much for joining us, Dunny, and it was good to hear how you're going despite sort of the poor timing and then a slight slide. But let's pretend it was 4,000, which was where you were at last week or whatever, and next time you're on, I'm sure with a bit more time, you'll rise as well. So thanks very much for joining us, Dunny.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. And yeah, I'm sure things will turn around. They always do.
Mark, anything to leave our listeners with?
I just noticed today we're almost up to 100 patrons. I think we've got 98 today. Massive thanks to those guys again. Huge factor in supporting the show and keeping us turning up every week. So huge thank you to everyone on board. And if you're not, we'd really appreciate your support.
That's it for this week's show. All the best for your round three trades. Enjoy trading in Nick Newman. And we'll catch you all next week. See ya.
Thank you. Yeah.